two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. Sitting in for Maria Chaleos today, I'm Dave Meekum, and Tom Bettis alongside, of course. And we are here to help you out with your gardening issues, your landscaping issues. Tom's a marriage counselor, so.
Yeah, sometimes. My wife doesn't think so. You know, sometimes you just have those days that it's an accomplishment to remember your name and yes. Remember to turn on your microphone.
It's like each day for me.
Yeah.
Okay, KSL Talk is the line. If you do have a question, we have lines open. You can call in. We'll help you out there. Tom, we have some text questions, though.
We do. Can I dig up and replant my onions that didn't grow very big? Unfortunately, the answer is no on that one. The onions, if you look at recommended planting dates for northern Utah, is usually mid-March to early April. They'll tolerate colder weather. And the reason you do that is because the day lengths, when they start to increase and then stay, you know, to where it's getting dark at 9 or 9:15 and getting light at 5:30 in the morning, that is where you're getting all your bulb expansion on the onion. And when the day lengths start to decrease like they are now, it's not getting light until 6 or 6:15. The sun's going down just before 9. And so the onions stop expanding. And so if you planted those onions late April to mid-May, you're going to get an inch and a half bulb, and that's it. So next year, when you replant your onions, put them in mid to late March. Make sure that, especially if you're ordering online, that you're going to get onions suited to our climate. So you do not want day-neutral onions for Utah. That could be another thing that happened. The day neutrals don't grow well here. They're more for the southern United States, Florida, tropical areas. So you want the long day onions and make sure that they're just something that's suited to our climate. So Walla Walla, Sweet Spanish, Ebenezer, there's several good varieties, but that's most likely what's happened.
Yeah. And some of those, the Walla Walla is a great onion. But, you know, I've never been very good at growing onions, and it's always because I've never gotten them in time. And so if you're going to plant them late, is it worth the effort?
You almost grow them as green onions.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's other things. Some of the onion crops are perennial, so if you grow chives or scallions and things, you can grow them as a perennial crop. Especially the chives. And my dad maintained a row of chives for 3 or 4 years. And we just go out and cut them and then use them for cooking. And we might get enough to put in the fridge for a few days. And almost like you would a Swiss chard thing. And the chives don't quite taste the same, but that is something that we like to do. And so something to also consider. But yeah, it's just a late March to early April time period is when you have to get those onions in to get the expansion.
Okay, let's take a call here. Richard's calling in from Mill Creek. Good morning, Richard.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well. How are you today?
Well, we're hanging in there. Quick question. I've got lots of questions, but just one question this morning. My impatience are making me impatient this year. They're just not happy campers. They're growing, but they're not really blooming. And last year, they just kind of went crazy and were unbelievable. This year, I'm fertilizing every other week with Miracle-Gro, and I just wonder if the heat is affecting them or just what's going on with them. Any ideas?
The heat definitely could be impacting them. And how long have you been planting impatiens in the same spots?
Actually, this is only my second year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the heat's probably causing it. As we cool down, you might back off on that Miracle-Gro. Are they in pots or planted in soil?
Oh, no. They're in a shady area in the yard.
Okay. Yeah, I would back off on the Miracle-Gro. Sometimes too much of that can cause a lot of green growth.
Oh,
and okay. Sacrifice flowers. And so just see how they do with regular water.
Okay. I know that occasionally you've talked about beating fruit trees, trunks with a whip or something to get them to pay attention. Should I do that to the impatient?
No, I'm afraid that would tear them up too much. You might be able to get your lawn chair and sit in front of them and berate them for a while. But
I've already tried that. It didn't work.
Yeah. You know, just kind of set up your bottle of herbicide and pictures of last year's impatiens and just let them have it.
Hold a shovel to their
yes.
neck.
Yeah. So, yeah, back off on your fertilizer a bit. And with the cooler temperatures, let's see if they bloom.
Okay.
Some things
Thanks
that you
so
could,
much, guys.
Yeah, in the future, you know, you might try some of the tuberous begonias. Those are quite shade tolerant.
Okay.
You could maybe try a few perennials in there. You know, the coral bells or even some smaller hostas or something. So if they give you problems this year and next, I would maybe swap out for just some different things. It could
okay,
be
Okay, great. Thanks
because,
so much, guys.
Yeah, the impatiens are sometimes wimpy plants.
All right. There you go, Richard. Maybe ending your patience for your impatience. And
yes.
Look at something different maybe in that shady area could help out. All right, let's look at another text there.
Well, the next one is, what 2 to 3 foot plant would you recommend in a south exposure? I've looked at pea shrub and Daphne hydrangea. So 2 to 3, you're going to be a very hot exposure. So crimson pygmy barberry, there's some thorns on it, but it has beautiful burgundy color that holds all summer. Would be one that you could look at. There are some spireas. Sometimes the spireas can be a little more challenging in Utah. They seem to not like our hot weather as much, but they, once established, can tolerate that. And, I mean, with the size you're looking for, I almost look for some perennials. You know, there's many very heat-tolerant perennials that get that 2 to 3 foot range that would just be happy campers. So the Coreopsis we talked about, there's some larger varieties of Coreopsis. They could look at purple coneflowers, black-eyed Susans. They could look at perennial hibiscus. I mean, there's so many. If they're looking for something, you know, a little more water-wise, whirling butterfly. So I almost would look at some of the larger perennials because you're going to get a long bloom season out of them. Another one, hummingbird mint, will get 2 to 3 feet, and it doesn't spread very much, but it blooms from July to frost.
Okay. Let's before we take a break here, let's answer one more question. This is also a text that's come in. I have a very strong creeping plant coming from a neighbor's yard. It's like Bermuda grass, but it doesn't thicken and cover like grass does. I've sprayed it with glyphosate, but it doesn't die. Rhizomes are very thick and strong. Do I need to use the method you suggest to kill morning glory by spraying with pure glyphosate and putting stems in a plastic bag in the sun to kill the plant and root?
They could try it. I wish I knew what it was.
It's like, what is this?
A little bit better description.
Yeah.
They could upload some pictures to our Facebook page, the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We cannot take pictures over the text line because it's a computer program and not a phone.
Get filtered out. Yeah, so and the other option was, if you want to call us and talk to us this morning, we can do that. Maybe get a little bit more, get a better description and try and help you out there. But yeah, if you got something that Roundup's not working on, then it's
and I wonder if it's ready to use Roundup in the pre-mixed spray bottles. That's okay for a lot of stuff, but it's the weakest they can make it and still have it effective. And for hard-to-kill weeds, a lot of hard-to-kill weeds just laugh at it.
Well, and is the glyphosate not working at all, or is it knocking it back and it just keeps coming back again? You know, is this a war of attrition kind of thing?
Yeah.
There's some other questions here.
So, yeah, we need more details.
So give us a call, or Facebook is an option for you, but we'll try and help you out if you want to give us a call. And that number is KSL Talk, 57500. If you have a text question, you can get that into us there. And we're going to take a break now. And on the other side, we'll be back with more of The Greenhouse Show.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
It's the Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. Ton, we've been talking obnoxious weeds the last couple of calls, and I was talking about one that I have right now.
Yeah, prostrate spurge.
It's not fun.
Yes, it's not prostate spurge, but prostrate. There's an R in there. And I always get a little bit of a chuckle because people will call in and be like, I've got prostate spurge. And I'm like, how does that work? but at any rate, prostrate spurge is a very aggressive annual. And each plant can produce hundreds of seeds. And so
it covers
you'll
ground.
See
I'm here to
one
tell you.
Plant, and within a couple of years, it's everywhere because it's so profuse in its seed production.
It's not, the lawn outcompetes it. But if there's a bare spot in your lawn or, you know, I've got some little dirt around a sprinkler control valve, it pops up in all those
it
places.
It tolerates compacted soil. Its growth strategy, and this is going back to a tech saying, can I spray spurge today? But its growth strategy is when it pops up in the spring, it gets two little seed leaves, and then it sends a root a foot deep. Literally, it goes down. And then there's plenty of soil moisture, and as the summer progresses, because it's got its roots so deep, it has permanent water. And when your lawn goes dormant or when your lawn is thin, it really does a number and goes all over the place as far as growing.
And thankfully, you know, it's going to die off when it freezes. But I will definitely see it again next year. My strategy so far has not been a great one. If I can spray them, I will. But the problem is they're kind of close to some of my tomatoes and things that I have to be super careful with. So generally, I've just been covering them with grass clippings.
Yeah.
And just, you know.
In the garden area, that's a great non-herbicide option. The seeds will still be there, and they'll last for a few years, but covering them over.
I'm going to use a pre-emergent.
Yeah. So for a lawn situation, if you were doing some prevention in the spring, the company BioAdvanced makes a product called Season Long Lawn Weed Killer. And it's a combination of a dandelion killer and a pre-emergent that works really well for broadleaf plants. So I would apply that, and that will help if it's in a lawn. But realizing that the spurge is in the lawn because there's something wrong with lawn management and the lawn's super thin.
Right.
So I've got a side yard that I have quack grass in. And that side yard's on a south exposure, and just traditionally the Kentucky bluegrass goes dormant and gets outcompeted by things like quackgrass and other things. And so this year I focused a little more on making sure it has sufficient water. And I haven't been overwatering. It's just been once or twice a week, but just making sure it has sufficient. And I traditionally don't fertilize a lot. And I fertilized this spring. And with giving the lawn sufficient water, mowing it 3 to 4 inches, and then with that fertilization, the quackgrass is still there, but its progress has pretty much been halted. And, you know, things like the spurge, they're not even germinating, and I was able to accomplish that in just a month or two. And so there is an importance to knowing how to manage lawns correctly so that you can control weeds, and you can do it. Now, there's situations it'll take longer than a couple of months to restore the lawn to a point, but when we sit here and talk about herbicides, they are only a short-term solution. So,
yeah. And you know, there's one of the best weed preventers is healthy bluegrass. That's just the bottom line.
It is. In garden situations, lawn clippings, and in lawn situations, healthy plants.
There you go. We've got a call here, Ton. Lewis is calling in from Provo and dealing with some pumpkins. I love pumpkins. Hi, Lewis.
Hi, good morning. Hey, we are raising pumpkins, but I have some questions. I have two plants that are covered with what I've diagnosed as that white powdery mildew. These are out in a kind of a parking area, so I have to haul the water out to them. I've wondered if I've been over-watering them. I've been watering them each day because in the afternoons the leaves go wilty. But wondering what to do about the white cast mildew on the leaves, how often I should water.
This is a common problem.
Yeah, does the white on the leaves rub off, or does it seem to be just attached to the leaf and doesn't rub off?
You know, I haven't tried that. It only covers, there's just two of them that have it. It's just on half of the plant. I was worried that maybe I was overwatering them, but everything I've found cautions that you not spray it when temperatures are ranging, you know, above 90 degrees. I've heard you can dissolve Excedrin or some kind of aspirin in water and spray it on there, but...
Well, you know, what I would, if you were trying to use something that is reduced risk, instead of using these homebrew fungicides, I would get some neem oil or triple action and see if you can slow it down. Your goal is to get those pumpkins into September. And if you generally can get them to September, you know, especially mid-September, it doesn't matter at that point if they get powdery mildew, because you can get the, even the green pumpkins, once they're picked, will eventually turn orange. And so it's just more putting them in a cool area, you know, in, you know, on the side of the house, on pallets, in a garage, something along those lines. So if it is, and I believe that it is powdery mildew, if it's only been on half the plants and it hasn't been there all summer, you know, it is about time powdery mildew starts spreading. So, you know, a fungicide is probably going to need to be your option. And because you are just dumping buckets of water to the squash and not really getting the foliage super wet, I'm assuming that you're not really doing anything wrong unless your lawn sprinklers are hitting the pumpkins that would flare powdery mildew.
All right. So go ahead and treat it. And watering every day is not a problem.
If that's what they need, it may be excessive, but sometimes park strip areas have soil like a road base or something under it that might be sharply drained. And I just, whenever I see park strips, you kind of just do what you do because you never know what the soil profile's like.
Right. Okay. But when they look wilty, I thought they needed to be watered. So thanks for your help.
You're welcome.
All right, good luck with that, Lewis. And they're very susceptible to that, Ton. It's something that happens. But there are varieties out there, that are resistant.
You may need to get them online, but if you Google powdery mildew resistant pumpkins, there's dozens of varieties.
Yeah, you can order those seeds and get those varieties. All right, we're going to jump out for some news, traffic, and weather. After that, we'll be back with the second hour of the Greenhouse Show. Thanks for being here today, and we'll be back with more on KSL.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.